The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's been 2 days since Bashar al-Assad's regime fell in Syria, with jubilant scenes observed right across the country. Abu Muhammad al-Julani, leader of HTS, the Islamist militant group, upon seizing power, said that he vows to make Syria for everyone. But in one of the most fragmented and ethnically diverse nations on earth, will Syria ever be truly stable? Joining me now is Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist. Greg, good morning and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the question of what they say and what they do, there was an administration controlled by the rebels in Idlib. What was that administration like? Because it might give us a clue as to what lies ahead.
It was, on the one hand, considered a reasonably competent administration. It provided basic services in Idlib. In some cases, it did a better job at that than the central government in Damascus. The electricity service in Idlib, for example, was more reliable than in regime-held parts of Syria. Along with that, though, it was also a rather authoritarian government. Critics of HTS were arrested, were put in jail. There was very little tolerance for criticism in the Northwest. So I think along with the concerns that some Syrians have about pluralism, about whether this is going to be an inclusive government or a more dogmatically Islamist government, there's also just a fear that they will end up replacing one authoritarian regime with another one.
Well, arresting and jailing your critics sounds very much like Bashar al-Assad.
It does, you know, not obviously on the scale that Assad did it, with these thousands of prisoners that we are seeing emerge from prisoners like Syed Naya in recent days, but certainly similar authoritarian tendencies. Everything HTS has said over the past few days since it arrived in Damascus has been good so far. It's saying the right things about protecting public and private property, telling its fighters not to loot, not to fire rounds in the air of celebratory gunfire, trying to reassure women that there wouldn't be a compulsory Islamic dress code imposed on them, saying all the right things so far, but it's still early days.
Now, the Prime Minister outgoing is cooperating with the rebels. What is his status? I mean, obviously he was associated with the previous regime. You'd imagine that he would be a target or a hate figure for the rebels, but they seem to be able to talk.
Speaking to people in Damascus over the past 2 days, it seems that the rebels are, that HTS, I should say, is going to try and work with at least some elements of the old regime, some public institutions, some of the civilian ministries that it will need to keep governance going in Syria. I think if anyone is likely to be a target for reprisals in the days and weeks ahead, it will be security figures associated with the regime, top commanders or military officers, people who were in charge of prisons or some of the notorious intelligence services of the Assad regime. But I think HTS is trying to signal to civilian members of the government that they shouldn't be concerned and that actually some of them might be needed in a post-Assad government.
And it appears that the leader of the so-called Salvation Government in Idlib will be brought into Damascus to head up the government there.
Right. Mohamed Bashir, the head, the prime minister of the Salvation Government, is being designated as the interim prime minister for the whole country. There's been some talk today that HTS might announce a provisional government. And the plan is that obviously they would rule for a certain period of time, and there would probably be efforts to draft a new constitution and come up with a new political system. All of that's still quite vague at this point, but I do think in the next day or two, we're likely to hear about a transitional government being appointed.
Now, just to let our listeners know, there's a slight delay on the line, so there are pauses that are not of our making. Just going on to the kind of sophistication that they might bring to the process, because people will remember the promises made by the Taliban in Afghanistan, which of course turned to dust very rapidly. Also, the lessons that might be learned from Iraq when the Americans moved in and civil society effectively ground to a halt as key members of the Ba'ath Party fled. Have they learned those lessons, do you think, Greg?
I think two things will make Syria different, or could make Syria different from the case of Iraq, the case of Afghanistan. One is that this was a Syrian-led effort to overthrow the Assad regime. It wasn't being done from outside by foreign powers, which is what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq. So there should be more legitimacy, more domestic legitimacy, I think, for a post-Assad government. The other thing is that you have had, over the past decade, particularly in the Syrian diaspora, lots of people working on exactly this question, trying to think through, if Assad were overthrown, what would a new constitution look like? What sort of political system could replace the regime? There's been a lot of effort put into that by the Syrian diaspora. The question, I think, is whether or not HTS will be willing to listen to some of those voices, bring some of those voices into government, or whether Jolani and the people around him try to have a much more centralized system of governance going forward.
I mean, you can understand the rebels saying, you know, we made the hard yards here. We are the ones who fought against this regime and eventually toppled it. You guys lived in your Western refuges away from harm. Why should we bring you back in?
Well, and there will even be those arguments within different rebel groups in Syria. The first rebels to reach Damascus over the weekend were not from HTS. They were from southern rebel groups, the remnants of what was once called the Free Syrian Army a decade ago. They got to Damascus first, and some of them are actually frustrated with HTS, not only for seeming to monopolize power in these first few days, but also for the overtures that it's making towards elements of the old regime. And you talk to some of these rebels in the south, they are frustrated. They think HTS is, you know, somewhat betraying the revolution by cutting deals with members of the Assad regime. So there are going to be all of these fissures, not only between inside and outside of Syria, but also between the different rebel groups inside of Syria.
Echoes of the Russians reaching Berlin first and at the end of the Second World War, and what kind of resulted from that, but Syria much more complex in its ethnic and religious makeup. I mean, that question of, you know, how Syrian do you feel? I mean, is there a sense of what it is to be a Syrian which would be shared by all the groups, irrespective of their backgrounds?
For half a century now, it's a country that has been defined by one regime, by Bashar al-Assad and by his father Hafez before him. And I think that's exactly one of the questions going forward, is whether you can construct some sort of affirmative national identity. You look at what's been happening in the northeast of Syria in recent days, for example, where there have been some clashes between the Kurdish-backed forces who have the support of the United States, who control much of the northeast, and some of the Turkish-backed Syrian Arab forces coming in from the northwest. Ostensibly, they should be on the same side right now, but they have different external supporters and they have different ideas of what they want Syria to look like going forward. So that ethnic tension between Arabs and Kurds, one of the other complicating factors in the future Syria.
Now, the Americans are bombing what they describe as arms dumps and other military installations which belong to ISIS. But ISIS is, of course, part of the broader rebel grouping. What does that mean for future relations for the United States with a Syrian government?
I think the targets that the Americans have bombed over the past few days, they are in parts of Syria where the airspace was previously controlled by Russian forces. And so American warplanes were unable to strike at those targets until a few days ago when Russia largely ceded the field in Syria. So I think they've had these targets, you know, on their list for some time, and now they have an opportunity to strike at them. But I think the longer-term question about America's presence in Syria, some of that is going to depend on whether they can reach a deal with Turkey. Turkey views these Kurdish militias in northeast Syria as being affiliates of the PKK, the Kurdish separatist group in Turkey. Turkey therefore considers them terrorist organizations. And this issue has been a real flashpoint in American-Turkish relations over the past decade. So I think there are going to be some discussions now about the Americans will want guarantees that Turkey is not going to persecute Syrian Kurds in the northeast. Turkey will want guarantees that they're going to stay away from the border. can America and Turkey come to some sort of agreement on that?
Hopefully all will become clear in time. Greg Carlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.